Diana Rees is out to save dolphin lives. If animals with developed self-awareness deserve greater protections, then dolphins should be at the top of the list. Rees directs the Dolphin Research Program at the National Aquarium in Baltimore and is a professor in the psychology department at Hunter College. She writes about her findings on dolphin intelligence in the book Dolphin in the Mirror. She told Steve Paulson that humans and dolphins have more in common than we think.
They couldn't be more different than us. Yet, their brains are a lot like ours in several ways, and what they do with them is a lot like what we do. So, for example, they have really big, complex brains like we do, like the great apes do, like elephants have. And these brains have two hemispheres, but they're organized a bit differently, and there's some differences in the sense that we have frontal lobes, and we can't identify any exact region that we would call the frontal lobe, but there may be different areas that function like frontal lobes, you know, that process information in similar ways. But dolphins like us, like the great apes, like elephants, show mirror self-recognition. That type of intelligence. And that's a level of self-awareness that we thought was uniquely human.
You actually put a spot, you marked them in a place that they ordinarily couldn't see. I mean, they could only see it in the mirror.
Correct. And that's a test called the mark test. And again, once the dolphins show self-directed behavior or the chimps show it, or children, it's generally considered they're showing mirror self-recognition. The mark test is another way to verify that they understand it's themselves. So they're marked in different parts of their body. And then will they go to the mirror and orient that part of their body right away to the mirror to see it? Or if that's true for the dolphins. For people, for kids or for chimps, they can touch the mark. But the non-handed dolphin, we had to come up with a way to show this without them touching it. So we marked them in many different places, and they would race to the mirror and orient right away to the mark. They positioned their body so the mark showed. And that was the evidence that we brought forth to show that they, too, can understand themselves. You don't have to be a primate to recognize yourself in a mirror.
So what does that mean, that they can understand themselves? I mean, are you talking about some level of self-consciousness here?
Yeah, I do think there it's a level of self-consciousness. I think it's a level of self-consciousness or self-awareness that most animals don't show. They have to understand that that external representation of themselves is self, and that suggests a sense of self. Beyond that, it's one thing to recognize yourself in a mirror. It's another thing to be interested, curious about what you look like in a mirror, what the inside of your mouth looks like, what your eye looks like close up, what it looks like when you spin in front of a mirror or when you do a particular kind of behavior. I mean, think about our own behavior in a mirror. Don't we often want to know what we look like when we do that new dance step or when we have our hair a certain way? I mean, we're really interested in what is it we look like in general. I mean, that's fairly sophisticated. And again, most animals like dogs and cats, even though they're intelligent in their own ways, simply don't show it. That when they look in the mirror, it simply doesn't compute that it's themselves.
Well, you tell some remarkable stories. One was a dolphin that turned the tables on you. It basically gave you a timeout.
Right. So a timeout, I think many of us are familiar with this. Sometimes if you're having a problem with something or you're working with somebody and you sort of just don't get it, you'll take a timeout or somebody will say, why don't you take a timeout? And they break social contact and you kind of go off your separate ways and think about what's going on. And teachers often use this with children. I was working with a particularly wonderful dolphin named Circe, and she was actually the first dolphin I worked with. And I was working in France. I had a grant from the French government. And in exchange for me studying Circe's behavior as part of my PhD thesis, the person who had this facility said, could you teach her to station in front of you and eat fish that were cut up into three pieces, heads, middles, and tails? So I did that, and I cut this large mackerel into these three sections, heads, middles, and tails. Circe readily ate the heads, quickly ate the middles, but spit out every tail I gave her. And these tails had, you know, tail fins. They were finny, and I thought, well, maybe she didn't like the fins. So I cut the fins off, and I joked that perhaps she was training me how to cut the fish the way she likes, in a sense. But everything was going well. Well, while Circe was learning to station, if she left me when I gave her the station signal, or if she left when I wanted her to stay while she was being fed, I simply gave her a timeout. That meant I backed away from the pool about 10 to 15 feet, stood up, you know, in a vertical position, and just looked at her. And she quickly realized that this was a correction mechanism and quickly learned to stay at station. A few weeks into the work, when she was stationing beautifully, she understood what was being done. I, by accident, fed her an uncut tail. And she sort of bolted up and looked at me, spit out the tail, and went across the tank and took this vertical position against the wall and just stared at me. And everybody, you know, when I tell this story, everybody gets it. You know, I don't have to say she was giving me a timeout or ask the question, was she giving me a timeout? It was apparent to me that she was doing something of that sort. And that meant she may have been understanding the function of this signal and using it back to me. I mean, that's true communication. That's the essence of how communication starts. And this was exactly what I was studying in school, how communication evolves between people or people and other animals. But that was an anecdote.
Yeah. Huh.
And for me as a scientist, I had to do more. So I turned it into an experiment.
So you did this again to see if she would again give you a time.
Yeah. I waited several days and fed her the properly cut tails, and she stayed with me. And then a few days later, I gave her on purpose this time an uncut tail, and I got the same response. She went across the pool. And the other few times I did it, I always got that response. She inspired that experiment.
Yeah. So yeah. Given this level of intelligence that you're describing, there are some ethical issues here. And I know you've been involved in efforts to save dolphins because there are some places, especially in Japan, that kill dolphins. What should we take away from this kind of research in terms of what we know about the suffering that dolphins might experience?
In many places like Japan, particularly a small village named Taiji, these dolphins are killed. They're slaughtered in the most inhumane way.
Why are they killed?
Well, the government says they're killed because they see them as competitors for the fishermen. And there's been a great deal of overfishing in the waters of Japan. And again, Japan is an island, and they rely on the fisheries for their livelihood. But I think it's been well acknowledged and documented that there simply is great overfishing in those waters. And the dolphins are actually being scapegoated. And 34 fishermen with a small number of boats are told to kill dolphins. And these quotas are set by the government of Japan each year. So each year, over 2,000 dolphins can be killed, and killed inhumanely in these drive hunts in Taiji. And that's the one area where it's primarily conducted.
And there was a documentary film about this, The Cove, which won an Oscar. And I know you were involved in the making of that film.
I'd never seen so many dolphins before.
The Japanese people don't even know about it.
They take the boats around to the secret cove that nobody could see. They're afraid of cameras.
They said if the world finds out what goes on here, we'll be shut down.
They were hiding something.
And you also say that, I mean, dolphins have often an acute sense of pain. I mean, not just from getting killed, but even from getting bruised.
Absolutely. They have really sensitive skin. If you rub your nail on a dolphin, they'll flinch. They have exquisitely sensitive skin. And dolphins are also subject to stress. Stressors can really affect them. They're subject to getting ulcers, both in the wild and in captivity. So, you know, these animals are very sensitive. And if you can imagine highly social animals like this, aware of what's going on around them, being herded by boats into these small bays where they're held for either a short amount of time or longer amounts of time, and then they're slaughtered, and seeing their youngsters around them and youngsters watching their mothers and others being slaughtered around them, I mean, it's just like something out of Dante's Inferno. It's hard to believe that any modern country could participate in something like this, and it's hard for me to believe as a scientist that this hasn't been stopped yet.
What has happened when the Japanese government has been presented with this evidence, which it has, I mean, I know by activists and scientists?
Yeah, we went in to talk to the embassy in D.C., and they just turned a blind eye. They basically said, well, you know, how intelligent does an animal have to be before you don't kill it? And that's a very good question. And we presented all this evidence of what we know about dolphins and why they need to be protected. The point is that the killing needs to be stopped, and the government of Japan does not want to be told what to do. And, you know, certainly we can understand that it's difficult to hear that you're doing the wrong thing. But in our own country, we had dolphins being killed in the dolphin tuna nets if you remember. And now we have dolphin-safe tuna. So we're not, you know, scientists aren't, and environmental groups are really not asking the Japanese government to do anything that we haven't asked our own government to do. And I've made the point that, you know, we have to take much more of a cosmopolitan viewpoint here. Cosmopolitan means, you know, being a citizen of the planet, a citizen of the Earth. This is not a new term. Diogenes, who was a Greek philosopher in the 4th century, coined this term cosmopolitan. And he said, I'm a citizen of the planet. And that's the approach I think we need to take. We're citizens of the planet. Our science is not just science in the UK or in the United States or in Australia. Our scientific facts need to transcend all countries, all boundaries. And this is our science. Let's turn it into policy.
Diana Reese is the director of the Dolphin Research Program at the National Aquarium in Baltimore. She's the author of the book, Dolphin in the Mirror. Steve Paulson spoke with her.